We buried Becky on the farm, with only Ernie as a mourner besides me and Mr. Carsons. It were a sunny day. She would have liked that. I were hollowed out with grief, but Mr. Carsons were even worse. He stayed in bed when he should have been up and working, and he moved through the house like the living dead. He were a ghost, but didn't know it yet. There were no spirit or soul in him any more. I saw a death wish like Corinna's in his eyes. Ernie must have seen it too, because he stayed on the farm caring for us, but Mr. Carsons wouldn't eat. He were just waiting for death to come and get him. But maybe death were taking too long, and Mr. Carsons were too impatient, because one night, as me and Ernie were sitting on the back porch, we heard a shot from the bedroom. Mr. Carsons had finally given up waiting for death, so he decided to go and meet death himself. We buried him next to Becky. Ernie said he would care for me. I returned to Hobart to live with him. Me grief for Becky were deep and long-lasting. Ernie recorded me talking and singing, but only for short bits, because that's all the cylinders would take. I were growing into me teenage years with Ernie, and he were growing old, not so much because of real age, but because he were becoming fatter, and he found breathing and even walking a trial at times. He knew he should take off weight, but he said he couldn't. "I am a weak-willed man," he said to me more than once. He tried to teach me to speak better, but I only got as good as this. I never did learn to write or read properly. He was scared of what would happen to me if he died, so he wanted me to be able to earn money. He thought I should go back to whaling, but there were few whalers now, because the whales were becoming less and less. He got me a job as a housemaid in a large house at the bottom of Mount Wellington. It were hard work, and the woman of the household would yell at me, calling me simple. Simple Hannah. Well, I used to visit Ernie, because he were me only friend. One day, he didn't answer the door. He used to lock it, because he were afeard someone were going to steal all his cylinders and recording equipment. I crept in through a back window and seen him face down in the corridor. I heaved him over. He had a terrible look of fear on his face, like he'd seen or thought something dreadful before he died. The rest of me life has passed without big things happening to me. I were a housekeeper and housemaid for several years. I hated the work I were doing, but I knew I could do nothing else. I saved every penny I could, because before he died, Ernie had made sure I were the owner of me mother and father's property. I thought if I saved up enough, I could fix up the house without having to work for anyone and live simply by myself. I never had a boy or man in me life, nor anyone else. How could I explain to them what I had been through? They would understand. Only Becky knew. I had me dogs, me chooks, me pigs, me freedom. Oh, there were a general store 7 miles down the track, and it were an easy walk there. The people of the town think I'm strange, and now I'm old, some children think I'm a witch. I never went into Hobart again after visiting Becky's school, although I heard there were a zoo that held the last Tasmanian tigers. I didn't believe they were the last, because out here I used to see them, smell them, or I seen their dung. They were cautious of me, because I'm a human, and I stayed me distance, but sometimes at night I'd sit on the veranda and see them moving silently through the bush. Bit by bit over the years, there were less and less tigers, till now I can honestly say I haven't seen one for about 5 years. Maybe they've gone further inland because of the number of people shifting into the area. I want to believe that because, well, I got to because, well, Tiger saved me life and Becky's. I never felt alone because, well, I sensed the spirit of Becky all round me. Every night I've the same dream. It's not quite a dream because it, well, it seems real to me. I find myself back in the bush on a sunny day. A girl comes out of the woods with two tigers. They stand and wait for me. It's Becky, Dave and Corinna. I walk towards them with a feeling of great happiness. We are together again. I grab Becky's hand and we walk back into that forest with a tiger either side of us. I wake up happy. Because I know that they are waiting for me to join them. And I will.
The Gates of Hell by John Connolly. Chapter 1, in which the universe forms, which seems like a very good place to start. In the beginning, about 13.7 billion years ago, to be reasonably precise, there was a very, very small dot. The dot, which was hot and incredibly heavy, contained everything that was and everything that ever would be, all crammed into the tiniest area possible. The dot, which was under enormous pressure due to all that it contained, exploded, and it duly scattered everything that was or ever would be across what was now about to become the universe. Scientists call this the Big Bang, although it wasn't really a Big Bang at all because it happened everywhere and all at once. Oh, and just one thing about that age of the universe stuff. There are people who will try to tell you that the Earth is only about 10,000 years old, that humans and dinosaurs were around at more or less the same time. A bit like in the movies Jurassic Park and 1 million years BC, and that evolution, the change in the inherited traits of organisms passed from one generation to the next, does not and never did happen. Given the evidence, it's hard not to feel that they're probably wrong. Many of them also believe that the universe was created in 7 days by an old chap with a beard, perhaps with breaks for tea and sandwiches. This may be true, but if it was created in this way, there were very long days. About 2 billion years long, give or take a few million years, which is a lot of sandwiches. Anyway, to return to the dot, let's be clear on something, because it's very important. The building blocks of all that you can see around you, and a great deal more that you can't see at all, were blasted from that little dot at a speed so fast that within a minute, the universe was 1 billion billion miles in size and still expanding, as the dot was responsible for bringing into being planets and asteroids, whales and budgerigars, you and Julius Caesar and Elvis Presley. Oh, and evil. Because somewhere in there was all the bad stuff as well. The stuff that makes otherwise sensible people hurt one another. There's a little of it in all of us, and the best that we can do is try not to let it govern our actions too often. But just as the planets began to take on a certain shape, and the asteroids and the whales and the budgerigars and you, so too, in the darkest of dark places, evil took on a form. It did so while the Earth was cooling, while tectonic plates shifted, until at last life appeared and evil found a target for its rage. Yet it could not reach us, for the universe was not ordered in its favor, or so it seemed. But the thing in the darkness was very, very patient. It stoked the fires of its fury, and it waited for a chance to strike.